Okay, I just got to read this out loud. It cracks me up. Jurassic World 2 director J.A. Bayona compares the sequel to The Empire Strikes Back.
Get out.
Yeah, I knew clocks were good. I knew.
Get out.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. Literature, movies, television, even music. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
And welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we talk about everything we love with comic books, with sci-fi, with the geek world that is out there. I am the Rock God of Podcasting, Charles McFall, and with me, as always, is Klotz in Mouth, Paul Klotz.
Yeah.
Because see, you call me Luke Bage, and so
Klotz. Oh, I thought that's what you called your mom.
Oh! early with the shots. I had a really cool name for you, man, and now it's just going to call it Garbage Pail Kid Wisdom.
You can just call me Timber.
Oh, there's Chris Wisdom, not even waiting for the introduction because he's, an eager asshat like that. So, hey, today we're going to hit some topics like Pokemon, Sun and Moon stuff. We got some news about that. Jurassic World 2, the headline there just, it makes me giggle. And not necessarily in a good way, like, oh, this is going to cause some controversy. Star Wars got some stuff coming out, and we've got news on Thor, and the Thor one I found interesting, so we'll get to all that in a second. You know what? Before we get going, because Klotz and Wisdom and I, we like to talk a lot, and we'll get on our discussions, and we'll forget to do things, so let me go ahead and just bust out the Loot Crate. Now, you guys know that there's a new Loot Crate out right now, right?
The WWE one?
No, that's not actually through Loot Crate. I don't mean a service. Oh. I mean actually in Loot Crate.
Oh, you mean
itself.
This month. Gotcha.
Yeah. No. Okay. So Loot Crate has actually partnered with Marvel now to compete with Marvel and Funko's own Collector Core. Now you can get a Marvel box in Loot Crate as well, and it'll have different collectibles for Marvel only. And it's $39 a month. I know our good friend Travis Jones is very excited about it. He was hitting me up the other day. So that's something you can take a look at. And, of course, it is Halloween. So we've got a Halloween-themed October box this month. And actually, by the time this publishes, it might be too late. So, hey, go and look at the Alien box that's out there, the Serenity box, the Firefly box, rather. Marvel box. You can check those out. And, of course, in next month.
In the WWE Slam Crate.
Is that actually in Loot Crate?
Yep.
Okay. Because I'm like, if you're advertising for a competitor, I'm about to fire you on there again. But here's the deal. You have until the 19th of each month to get that month's box. And then it's gone. So if you missed out on the Halloween crate and you wanted something like Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw Halloween, Nightmare on the Walking Dead, all those little horror movies that I don't know anything about, those things. If you wanted that, you should have got it and got it. Go to lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up. Enter code giant-size-team-up to get your money off of any subscription today. So I heard you chuckling over there, Chris. Klotz, man, you got some interesting news about Pokemon Sun and Moon, but before you talk about that, have you been playing the Pokemon Go?
Yeah, I've been playing a bit.
What do you think of it? What's your take on that? I've been very curious to hear your take.
Man, like, we try to aim for positivity here, my friend.
Okay. Smile when you say it's a dumpster fire.
No, it's not. It's not that. It's just my biggest... I'm disappointed with Pokemon Go, largely because to me it doesn't have anything beyond the whole wander the countryside and catch Pokemon thing.
Yeah, that's fair. That is fair.
You know what I mean? And that's my biggest beef, is I just feel like it's missing a lot of what makes the Pokemon games great. And that is, like concepts like breeding and, all that kind of stuff. And it's just like, I get what they were going for. It's just, I don't know. And one of my big issues is I'm tired of catching the same Pokemon. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of that, for sure.
It's at this point, I literally see the same, like, 8 to 10 Pokemon no matter where I go, where I live. If I travel elsewhere, I might see a whole new mix. But how often do people really get to travel that much? I'm sure there are some people out there who get to go all over the world for work or something like that, and they're having a blast with it, but...
That's a shot at Bo York. Host of the Pokemon Go podcast.
No. He's a creator of it. Guest host every once in a while.
The other issue I have with it is, I think a lot of people end up playing it in the car. You know what I mean?
Oh, they're shutting that down hard. We're going to be talking about that this
week. Yeah, that's not a good play because now I have no interest in playing it because I don't mind going for a walk. Don't get me wrong, but I'm not going to go for a walk just to play a video game.
You know, I wonder. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Paul.
No, yeah, that's just what I was going to say, though, is just, you know.
I was going to say that, and Charles, feel free to talk about it on the show from this perspective, every week there's another story about how Niantic is facing another lawsuit or somebody else is pressing litigation against Niantic. And I wonder if this is just Niantic's way of, before those lawsuits come, is saying, okay, well, my 15-year-old died in a car accident because they were playing your game. I'm going to sue you. They won't allow that to happen.
Yeah, that could be. But we definitely will talk in depth about that on the Pokemon Go podcast, which will be recorded this week to go out on the weekend. So check that out. It's part of the Giant Size Team Up Network. I host that with Brian Ibbett and Joe Ard. And like Chris said, Bo York does make an appearance from time to time because he's out busy catching him. I am with you, Klotz. I still like it. You know, I still find myself excited when I level up, when I figure something out, when I took a gym the other night for like 3 seconds and then I think some phantoms, ghosts came in because it was a graveyard. I think the undead were playing because there was nobody out there and they took the gym back from me somehow. But that being said, it definitely can become a grind, but I have found what people enjoy the most, like when I hear the stories, is when they are out in major metropolitan areas and they're fighting the gyms or they're finding those other Pokemon that they need. They're getting the things to level up. I mean, Joe, we give him a hard time about being the one percenter all the time, but because he's always got these Snorlaxes and these Dragonites and whatever. But the fact of the matter is he's out there enjoying being healthy and walking around and running through the park and everything else. And I got to tell you, Klotz, I know you can't go and get a kid that'll help you out now because that would be awkward. But when I took my 4-year-old daughter for a walk the other day, all she wanted to do was walk down this trail at this park while we're waiting on her older sister to get done. And that was – I caught a lot of basic stuff, Rattatas and whatevers. But it was fun to actually get out there. It gave me a reason to not go, no, just play on the playground and leave me alone while I play my Marvel Tsum Tsum or whatever.
You know, you joke about that, but that should be a selling point from Big Brothers, Big Sisters right now.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Get a big. Yeah.
I mean, well, that's the thing is like when the game first came out, it was incredible. I mean, people were everywhere. You go to any major park in any town that has any kind of substantial population at all, and you'd see, you know, sometimes dozens of people. You'd at least see a clump of people. And that was exciting. And there is a lot of potential in that. But I really feel like their release schedule for updates has been kind of, you know, it resembles a glacier. in that they're not adapting, you know, they're not keeping people, in my opinion, quick enough. I still see people playing it, you know, people will pop it out, but it's not like it was in the first couple weeks when it was just insane.
Right. I think it could get back to that with some of the new updates they've promised. But yeah, you've got right now you've got hardcore Pokemon fans, and then I'm like on the bottom edge of the people who stay of just it's a fine enough game. And I actually know that I can get more out of it when I do more with it, like go out in the world and do more. And I'm a gamer along those lines. So I like it for that. But beyond, I think I'm on the very bottom edge of how you retain people. I really would like to see more.
Yeah. And my other big thing, too, is that the app itself just drains battery so fast. That a lot of times, like, you know, in an interesting side story, one of our fans from FTH, Mark Twigg from Mug, he got me to start playing Monster Legends, which is available on Facebook, but also through Android and I believe iOS as well, which is it's kind of a Pokemon clone game. It's from the same company that does Dragon City. So it's got that whole base building thing that Dragon City had going on. And it has tons of features that I absolutely hate. right? Like, I hate time gating. I hate it when it takes me 2 days to build the habitat for my brand new legendary guy, and that it costs me like insane amounts of money to build it. Like, don't get me started. But what I do like about that game is that it's, you know, basically it's got the formula. It's got the Pokemon formula at its core, which is, you know, you breed monsters. Monsters have different types. You know what I mean? And different types are, you know, there's the whole, you know, strong against this, weak against that thing going on. And it's a lot of fun in that regard. You know, it's a little bit grindy at times, but it's a little bit battery intensive, but it doesn't drain the battery nearly as much as trying to play Pokemon Go, which is pulling on your GPS signal, which is the thing is it's using Pokemon Go uses your data and your GPS and everything. And it's graphically intense relatively for a phone. So it's like, ugh, you know what I mean? Whereas I can play Monster Legend on my phone for most of the day and my phone dies pretty quickly anyways, but the point is, like, I get a lot more gameplay out of it, and it's the kind of gameplay that Pokemon Go is supposed to be aiming for, in my opinion. You know what I mean? Is the, you know, grabbing the cool different Pokemon and doing stuff with it. And so I feel like there are other games that fill that void for me, though, that's not quite as interactive and it's not as community building.
I was going to roll that in for you. Good.
I was going to say, that being said, though, this entire year, while everybody's been getting super amped up for Pokemon Go, I have been chewing my nails waiting for Pokemon Sun and Moon. I am so excited. And today is the day. We're recording this on October 18th, which is exactly a month before Pokemon Sun and Moon hit stores.
Way to make this not evergreen. Thank you, Klotz. Okay, now that's an inside throwback joke to From the Helicarrier. I do apologize for new listeners.
This is an important moment, though, because it's exactly 30 days before the game comes out and the demo hit today. So if you're listening and you're a fan of Pokemon and you have a Nintendo DS, go out and grab the Pokemon Sun and Moon special demo. I've played around with it a little bit. I put maybe a half an hour into it. It seemed kind of cool. Everything looks beautiful, by the way. Like, you know, the graphics for...
Wow. You were able to spend a half an hour on a demo?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's...
Well, a lot of them are like 5-minute shorts. Impressed.
This one it's like, hey, you know, you're introduced as Sun, you know, the character, you're named Sun as in Sun in the Sky, not Sun as in Son of some father.
So is a bad guy Moon? Is that?
I don't know. I have no idea.
What's Pokemon Sun and Moon if you're Sun?
What I would guess is if you buy Sun, you get, you know, that is the default name that they're going to try to apply to your character. And that if you get Moon, they're going to try to call you Moon is my guess.
Okay.
Oh, I was wondering if Mike should cue the Dayman Nightman song right here.
Oh, yeah, right around now. Absolutely.
Dayman, fighter of the Nightman.
The really cool part about the demo, though, is you get the demo, you get a taste of the new interface and everything like that. You get to see one of the new features, which is the trials, which is kind of cool. Like, they give you a little camera and you've got to go hunt down Pokemon and take a picture of them. And the ones that I was taking a picture of, when you take a picture of them, it startles them and then they fight you. So you find them, you take the picture, and then you fight them. What's really cool, though, is
a social allegory to paparazzi and
yeah, I don't know.
You know?
I don't want to give a misconception. That's not going to be the whole game. I think it's just one little part of the game. It's like a little bit of a side version of how you can go about doing things and, you know, fighting different Pokemon and stuff. But the really exciting part about the demo is that you get a special Ash Greninja, which is Ash's Greninja from the XYZ television show. And you'll be able to, you know, you get to pick it up and have it in Sun and Moon when you pick up the game later on. So by getting the demo, you'll be able to grab it out of there and play it in your main game later.
So not a pre-order, not anything you have to spend extra money on. Just get the free demo. And because you tried the demo, you get a free Greninja for the game.
Yep.
That's cool.
Sweet.
That's cool.
And apparently I was doing a little bit of reading on the Pokemon subreddit, and they were saying that it had max IVs in a lot of the important stats. So it's not the kind of thing where you have to do sometimes. If you're a min-maxer when you play Pokemon, a lot of times you got to keep reloading your game to try to get good, like a good nature and good stats. You know, for example, this whole year they've been handing out the Mythical Collection Pokemon. Every month there's one you can either download from the the online service, or you can go into a GameStop on some months and get a code for it. Speaking of which, Pokemon fans out there, if you didn't know, GameStop should have Volcanion codes for you this month right now. I don't know how much longer they'll have them.
Now, what do you have to do to get the codes? Because could I don't play, but can I go get one and then give it away to somebody?
Yeah, absolutely.
We might have to do that for the
show. Yeah, you literally just you walk into your local GameStop and you say, hey, do you guys have the Pokemon codes? And they, you know, they'll tell you yes or no. Sometimes they don't have them. Sometimes, especially in a large metro area like Charles, you live in the greater Atlanta area. You know, so you.
Yours.
Shut up, Chris. Your experience might vary. Like in my local town, you know, usually have a week or more when the codes first come out to still be able to walk in and get them. But in big cities, they might not get enough. You know what I mean? So you got to get in there. But yeah, you walk in, you ask for them, and they'll give them to you. My local stores are really cool. Whenever we go in, they always offer us two if we want them per person. With these, because you know you have X, Y, and Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, and the codes work in either of those, you know, two mm-hmm. generations, if you will, or not generation. They're the same generation, but you know what I mean. So they'll offer you up to two, assuming that you have one of each. You know what I mean. Uh-huh. So they're super cool. Your mileage may vary with that. I don't want you to walk into your local GameStop and be like, "Oh, I heard some guy on the internet say that you could get two." Because my local stores are cool about it, but you know. Anyways, but yeah, so they've been handing those out, and so I'm sitting here when I do – I haven't played Pokemon in months because when I do turn on my DS to play Pokemon, I'm sitting there reloading my game over and over again to get a competitive nature with good IVs, and it's annoying. So that's what's really cool about this Ash Greninja is that it's got a neutral nature, so it doesn't have any penalties. So, you know, it's not going to be a super sucky version. And you get to just, you know, play with it and enjoy it. You know what I mean?
That cool. Sounds awesome. Now, to bring some controversy into our little circle here. Okay, I just got to read this out loud. It cracks me up. Jurassic World 2 director J.A. Bayona compares the sequel to The Empire Strikes Back. And
get,
I just...
Get out.
Yeah, I knew clots were good. I knew...
Get out.
I knew you were going to lead it off, and then Chris is probably over there finding a way to mock it. And I just skimmed through this article. It made me laugh. But the idea is that they're going to be taking the sequel, which I will go ahead and tell you flat out, 100%, I love the Jurassic Park movies. I'm not saying they're great. I am definitely not saying they're Oscar-winning material. I just love the concept and the visualization and the FX that they have that go into it. And while I read the books and felt like the movies could have been done a little bit differently, the biggest thing I do love being an adult now is when movies do real world timelines, right? So they did it 20 years after the last Jurassic Park or whatever it was, and however many years it was. And so it's a real world progression. So I've grown up, I watched the movies when I was a teenager, then Jurassic World came out and it was the exact same, the real world time had passed. Mm-hmm. And they'd spent time building this thing up. It's cool. Well, they're going to be tackling some complex issues revolving around dinosaurs, specifically when it comes to animal abuse. And I'm like, the way it's written, I was just like, okay. Didn't they always kind of cover this stuff in all the movies? Somebody mentioned, hey, go back to the first one with Jeff Goldblum. He's talking about the chaos theory and having animals locked up and life always finds a way and those kind of things. I didn't think this was new. But the quote is, the dinosaurs will be a parable of the treatment of animals treatment animals receive today. The abuse, medical experimentation, pets, having wild animals in zoos like prisons. Well, you can tell where they're coming from there. The use the military has made of them and animals as weapons. And then they go on to say some other stuff. Now, that being said, I'm not necessarily agreeing with zoos, and for a whole nother show, not breaking the panel. But you can tell when they put that, when they say like animals in zoos like prisons, you could get a point of where they're going to come from. But here's the part that cracked me up. All right, Chris and Glass, get your guns ready. Bayona, who's going to be the new director himself, also discussed the sequel's darker and more frightening nature in an interview with Spanish publication something.
I couldn't pronounce that if you paid me money to.
Comparing the film to hallmarks such as The Empire Strikes Back and The Wrath of Khan. Specifically, it'll be darker and scarier than the previous film. Obviously, when you have Chris Pratt, it'll also be very funny, but it'll be darker. It's the second step in a trilogy, and the second step is always dark, as in The Empire Strikes Back and The Wrath of Khan. All right, I got to tell you guys, Empire Strikes Back is possibly my favorite Star Wars film of all. And I just something about the planet Hoth and the roughness that they went through and the all the crap they go through in that movie. I don't know. I just dug it.
Luke, use the Force. Run to Dagobah. Run to Dagobah. Sorry, go on.
When I run to
see, you spend your time thinking about the first half of that movie, which is on Hoth, and I spend my time thinking about Dagobah, which I hate.
Yeah, it kind of was weird. That whole Darth Vader cutting the head off thing, and it was his face. Yeah.
To be fair, one of the best parts about Empire Strikes Back is all the bounty hunters. I mean, it's only like a scene.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for Expanded Universe nerds like myself and kids who grew up playing the CCG by Decipher back in the day, that meant a lot to us. So, you know what I mean? As right now, I'm somebody who plays the X-Wing miniature game, and we, over the last year or two, have gotten all of those bounty hunter ships as playable models in the game, which has been amazing as well. So Empire has a special place in the heart of any EU fan. Absolutely.
Definitely. Well, Chris, what do you think when they say that they think Jurassic, I can't even do it with a straight face, when they say Jurassic World 2 will be as like Empire Strikes Back or Wrath of Khan?
Well, and see, and I don't take quite as much offense to that as... Because you understand what they're saying. They're saying it's going to be dark. This is going to be the down ending. You know what I mean? Kevin Smith summarized it appropriately in Clerks. It's a down ending, and that's what life is a series of down endings. But I mean, if you look at Empire Strikes Back, Chewbacca was in binders on Cloud City, so I guess that would go right into the treatment of animals. Perhaps there's going to be a white whale esque Tyrannosaurus here to get the Melville quote out of Wrath of Khan. I don't know how they're I don't know how apples to apples these comparisons are going.
The movie will end with a T-Rex screaming "God!"
Yeah, there's something. Yeah. But, I mean, to me though, that's always you are setting expectations very high when you start comparing yourself to movies of that caliber.
Yeah,
especially that much in the zeitgeist for being what they were.
This quote feels like
hubris,
hype. Yeah. He ends it like we'll take it a step further. This is still the director, Bayona. We'll take it a step further. There are things that will happen that people are not expecting, and they really are shocking. What is it going to be? Okay. Dinosaur sex? Because I would not expect that. It would be a little shocking. But other than that, I expect dinosaurs to eat people. Right. I expect them to run in panic, and I expect the humans to win in the end.
It will be a Spinosaurus with two fins.
So, what's the play on this? Does that mean that they intend to kill the main characters or one of the main characters?
That would be shocking. If you killed off Chris Pratt, that would be very shocking.
No, Alan Grant's coming back to get eaten.
I've lived a good life. It's my time now.
That's the thing, though. That's about the only thing you can do to really shock anybody anymore. The movie, over the last 10 years or so, the only movies I've ever seen that really surprised people, if they weren't, you know, like a psychological thriller, were the ones where something horrible happens to the main character. And people are just like, whoa, what? Because that's about the only thing you can do now that people don't expect very often. We're also talking about the post Game of Thrones age, though. Everybody could die, you know what I mean? So,
nobody's safe. To be fair, Joss Whedon did it first. He always killed off a main character somewhere in the show.
Well, to be fair, George R. R. Martin's been writing those books for a while.
Well, to be fair, nobody knew who the hell he was, and he ain't writing them now, is he? Sorry, I had to take my shot when I had it. We took clots off. We win, Chris.
No, it's just going to be like, well, fantasy nerds like myself knew who he was long before any of you fools did. So talking about caliber of movies, first of all, let's talk about the first Jurassic Park. The first Jurassic Park is a masterpiece, right?
I would say it's a strong first movie. It set the tone.
Okay, for its era,
that's a good actor.
That was by far the most advanced movie of its era.
Absolutely. Like, and it still had good acting in it.
Right. And it had great acting. It had great memorable scenes. Like, you know, the whole scene in the Jeep where he's talking about chaos theory and then you see the ripples in the cup and, you know, the first big T-Rex attack. That scene is legendary. You know what I mean? It was suspenseful. It was exciting. I was a little kid when that movie came out, but I was scared shitless. Like, really. Like, I had nightmares for weeks. Because of various scenes in that. The other scene that really stands out to me is the scene in the cafeteria with the raptors. You know, that was genuinely terrifying. You know what I mean? Like, and everything looked so real. And one of the issues we have nowadays with movies of the modern era is we're conditioned for CGI. We expect it now. You know, and a lot of times you don't even notice it because it's getting quite good. But it's never as exceptional now because we're well past our amazement of it.
Right. Well, that brings me along these same lines. I want to get back to this, but I heard from, I think it was Geek Versus, they were talking about Lion King is getting a live action treatment. And I was like, is that still
That's
CGI? Is that really?
Well, I feel like that's Disney's new thing is they're like, animated movies are doing okay nowadays. Let's just do live action.
But it's still kind of animated, right? Isn't CGI a form of animation?
Well, right, it's in conjunction with live actors.
It's going to be like the Jungle Book.
But there are no people. There's people in Jungle Book. There are no people in The Lion King.
That's true.
Maybe there will be, maybe there won't be. I don't know. You're right. You're not wrong. You imagine shooting that movie? Like, you're just out on location in, like, Africa shooting scenes, and then there's some fool walking around in a mocap suit, like, on all fours. you got to think of what the native Africans think. They're just, like, these crazy white people come to our lands, and they film a guy in a white suit crawling around in the dirt.
Like, and then they shoot a girl in a zoo for no reason. Right. What the hell's wrong with these people?
No, don't bring up Lord Harambe.
Harambe! Oh, dude, what if?
If Harambe shows up in this Jurassic World movie? Because I was thinking that.
That would be shocking. Oh, my God. That would be so dark and shocking. They brought him back from Jeanette. Oh, that would be it. No. I was thinking of.
You know there's going to be a Harambe movie that gets made, right?
There has to be. As someone with as much as it's picked up on the internet. But who was the Australian guy that did all the animal things?
Steve Irwin.
Yeah. So what if Steve Irwin had been reincarnated as Harambe and we just did it to him twice?
Oh, my God.
This is where my mind goes sometimes. I'm just saying, that's how dark Jurassic Park 2 is going to be, everybody.
If Steve Irwin just shows up in Jurassic World 2, then he is right.
Yeah.
But to get back to the realm of actual things that have happened, the original movie was so exceptional. I would argue that it's a masterpiece. I would argue it's one of the greatest films that's ever been made. Even if it's not, you know, it won't hold up forever per se, but it still looks great for the era it was made in. You know what I mean? There's a lot of movies that were amazing when they came out that don't look good anymore, but that movie still looks pretty good nowadays.
Yes, absolutely.
And the pace and the plot and all that stuff works. I mean, it's still cool. And that movie did have a lot of shocking moments. You know what I mean? Like, and there was a lot of suspense, a tremendous amount of suspense. I would actually argue that that's one of the things that a lot of the other Jurassic, you know, franchise movies since then have failed to capture is the suspense of the first movie. You know, like The Lost World, it had its moments, but it wasn't the same. You know what I mean? Yeah,
it's not just the suspense. It's that wonder. It's that sense of wonder because they're walking through the park, seeing all these dinosaurs. We're all sitting in the theater for the first time, seeing that technology and having that same sense of wonder. That's that antithesis of that suspense. So you get both of those great flavors in one movie.
Yeah. So they got to find a way to capture that in a way. Now the way he's making it sound like they're going to be exploring like the military use of them and stuff, I'm like, are we getting Dino Riders Redux here? Because as an 80s kid, that would be the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
Like if they have like raptors running around with like lasers on their sides and stuff like that, I will lose my mind. It'll bomb. Like people will hate that movie, but I will love every second of it if that's what happens. I don't think that's where they're going though, but it would be pretty crazy.
And they'll kill all the dinosaurs and then there'll be one egg left and the dude will name it Denver, right?
All right, all right. Moving on. We got some more headlines here. Chris, what about some new Star Wars Force Awakens stuff going on here?
All right. So the if you didn't know, the collector, the 3D collector Blu-ray is getting ready to come out. And they've released a deleted scene from the movie. The DVD is released November 15th. And since, about 1980? Since 1977, excuse me, we've all been teased with, I was thinking Empire because we were talking about that earlier. We've all been teased with what a Wookiee will do when he's angry, and we've never been actually able to see it. Well, J.J. Abrams apparently filmed that scene, and we're all going to get to see that as one of the deleted scenes. And the EW article, and it'll be in the show notes, so you'll be able to see it. We'll have a link for the first portion of it. So Simon Pegg's character, Unkar Plut, he apparently went to Maz's place in the movie and ran into Rey and was getting a little handsy with her, and Chewbacca came to stop it. And Unkar Plut was apparently not intimidated enough by a Wookiee, and in the preview you'll see where he starts to poke him in his wounded arm, and apparently that ends very badly for him. And the Wookiee will, we're talking literally rip, plorp, a limb goes flying and lands on a gambling table, earning a high-pitched scolding from Warwick Davis's character, Wolovan. So, we'll finally get to see what happens when you anger a Wookiee.
Now, do you think they'll have the graphics finished out for that scene?
You know, the preview that I saw, it's not like wireframe or anything, and it's not anybody in mocap. It's definitely not finished effects, but it's fairly finished. So
I guess I can get why fans want to see this, but seriously, are you going to go buy the 3D special edition for this scene that will not actually, right? It's not going to be cut into the movie. You're going to have to go to deleted scenes and just watch it isolated.
Yeah, probably. But I'm sure there's a whole lot more that we just don't know what's coming. And I haven't, there's a whole collection of Easter eggs that I haven't looked through yet of things that are going to be in there.
And I get adding a bunch of stuff, but Chris, we were talking about this before. I'd like to bring it back here is, I like when scenes are put where they're supposed to be. I hate going to deleted scenes and just getting a sizzle reel of, wow, that was an interesting scene, but I don't know where that was supposed to be exactly in the movie. I'd like to see a little context before and after type of deal. I really just want to put it in the film, because half the time it's like, why did you cut that? The other half of the time is, yeah, you cut that. Why'd you put this in as a bonus feature on my Blu-ray? I don't understand. Yeah. What do you guys think? Do you guys like deleted scenes, or do you want to put into the film to actually watch them?
I like deleted scenes, but I'm of the same mind. I like them when they're, I like those few and far between ones when they actually add them into the movie. And like I said earlier, I don't mind if it's, you know, a rough cut, it's still wireframe, or it's, I've seen it in some cases where it's just animatics and the script has been read through, but it's neat to see it put in the full context of the movie. So, and just giving you another version of the movie to see on the disc.
Klotz?
Yeah. I mean, I like what Chris said, I don't like the ones that are very obviously literally designed to just end up on the DVD, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. where they're like, oh, this isn't a real scene, we're not going to include it in the movie, but we're going to put it on the DVD to sell DVDs. Like, no, get out of here. Like, when it's like perfectly cut and polished and everything, but it contributes nothing to the main story, I'm just like, as opposed to like what Marvel did with the one shots, where they're like, we're going to do a little mini, you know, like 10-15 minute thing that's going to expand on the story, maybe give some background insight, maybe make you laugh a little bit and tie things together, but it's not something you have to see. And it's, you know, we're going to throw that on the Blu-ray. That's right. Different. That is some serious value. You know, that's like, okay, cool. Yeah. You know, that's a thing I can go enjoy it again and again later on if it was good enough, you know what I mean? Or, you know, I might watch it if I'm marathoning all the movies or whatever, but like not some random scene that you just made up to just like try to sell a Blu-ray.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. And in the days before Blu-ray, they put out special editions that had extra discs with them, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm a huge fan of Pitch Black Chronicles of Riddick. They're at least working towards doing a third Riddick right now, which would just float my boat, man. I love that universe. And so when Chronicles of Riddick came out, I played the game, which is deals with how he got out of the prison before Pitch Black. And, you know, when John's talked about how they had to hunt him down and this and that and the other. And so I played that. I've done everything that has to deal with Riddick. It's so cool. And when it came out with the movie, I made sure to buy the Animatrix with it, which is 11 short animated films by different animators and different directors to tell stories from the Matrix. And then Dark Matter, that came with it. I bought the collector's edition that had the extra DVD, which is a 30-minute animated short on a disc of its own that goes from Pitch Black to the Chronicles of Riddick, and it details what happened in that after they escaped the planet from Pitch Black. And that's the kind of stuff I love. I love seeing these stories that expand the universe, give you a more well-rounded feel for it, fill in gaps of the story. And they did that on extra discs before, and I had spent a lot of money before Blu-ray came along. But that's the kind of thing that would absolutely play well, especially with Star Wars, right? Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit of the story of Maz. Throw in a one-shot, 15, 20-minute one-shot of Maz and why she's so special and why she has that place that's fairly sacred almost.
And I think movies like Star Wars and the Star Wars franchise, I think those are one of those that really earn the ability to be able to come out with special editions consistently. Because it gives
some crappy movie to start with and then fill out the rest of the movie later.
Well, no, I'm not just attacking those guys, but I'm saying that I don't know how many times you guys have individually watched those movies, but we all have watched the movies multiple times. We love everything. Well, not everything. We love a lot of things about those movies, and it's always neat to get to see something you didn't know, and especially if you can put it in the context of the rest of the movie. If you get to see something new that you didn't know before. Do I necessarily want to pay $40 every time a new edition of the movie comes out? No. Would it be cool if I could get, you know, if I could somehow just download the additional
the
stuff?
Extras.
Yeah, that would be cool too. But I think those I find less offensive when they do that, and they don't do them every year or anything either. So
yeah, because we know the movie came out last December, mm-hmm. right? The DVD, Blu-ray, digital, all that came out this spring. Is that right?
Yes.
And it's now on, you see, HBO Star. I think it's on Stars. Star Wars Force Awakens now is on Stars. So you can stream it through a service. And within a relatively short amount of time, it'll be on Netflix because everything ultimately ends up on Netflix or Hulu, you know, something mm-hmm. like that. So, them waiting. They're pushing for the holiday season, right? They're getting a new product ready, essentially, for the holiday season, for the collectors, for those who have yet to buy the editions that have come out. Because I haven't bought a Force Awakens edition yet at all myself.
Well, I mean, I bought it when it came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bought
Yeah, I'm with Chris on this, man. Like, at least I think this is what you're trying to say. Like, I have such a weird feeling about, like, special editions and stuff like that. Because sometimes they're warranted, but, like, when you're releasing another version of it within like a year, I'm kind of like, I'm a bit annoyed by that. You know what I mean?
Sure. And I don't have a 3D TV. I don't have any use for 3D. So I'm not going to buy the 3D.
Yeah. Image. My roommate has a 3D TV. We never use the 3D feature though. I mean, he bought it like almost 10 years ago when it first came out. You know what I mean?
So does he have the powered glasses or the non-powered glasses?
I'm not sure. I think they have little watch batteries in them.
Yeah, because I think my friends that have them that have the powered glasses, they are less likely to use them than the ones that I...
You know, and it's not even about the power. It's just that it's like, one of the big selling points was that it would work with the PlayStation 3's 3D feature. And we tried that, except you can't play something really immersive like Call of Duty that way because there's screen lag because of the 3D feature.
Right.
And so it ruins any multiplayer experience like that. You know what I mean? Like, you can't. I mean, you're slower than everybody else. It just doesn't make any sense. With VR coming as far as it is, too, I think the 3D concept on TVs is just going to fall away pretty soon. because it doesn't, I don't know. I'm not a big 3D person. Like, I just think it's kind of a gimmick.
Yeah, I like it when in the rare situations you don't actually need glasses. And I know the 3DS actually did that. The glasses built into the DS.
Yep.
That was pretty nifty. I mean, my son had one for a while. I played with him in the stores. I thought that was cool technology, and that was a much a better way to go, but maybe it's harder
it's
to do.
It's funny
on a
that you
scale.
Mentioned that, though, about the 3DS, because when I play the 3DS, I have to turn off the 3D function because it makes me, like, nauseous. It gives me, you know, it gives me car sickness stuff. And yeah. Like, so I'm like, I kind of like in the way it is on the, I don't know how it is on the new 3DS because I don't have a new 3DS, but I have the original 3DS and it's just a little slider on the side of the screen.
Right, right, right.
And I'm like, why can't this just be a Switch? Because I would very much like this to permanently be off, but it slides all the time, you know? And it can be kind of disjointing at times. So I'm just like, ugh.
Well, ultimately, my son sold his 3DS, decided he wanted another one, and we ended up getting a 2DS because he never used the 3D anyway, and it was smaller and easier and cheaper to buy for him. So we did like a Christmas thing or something, I don't remember, but he got a 2DS, and that same machine, just no 3D functionality at all, and it was fine. It was good. So I get what you're saying. I love when 3D is done right. Especially when it's animation or CGI, it really looks good. Avatar, dude, I gotta tell you,
Avatar was amazing in 3D.
It was amazing in 3D. Amazing.
It blew my mind. But that was almost 10 years ago,
right? And nobody does it the way. I mean, he put such painstaking efforts into James Cameron did into making it 3D. Specifically, no gimmicky 3D. I mean, I wouldn't say no gimmicky 3D, but it wasn't like, hey, I'm watching this 2D version, and oh, I can tell this scene is here just because they must have shot this in 3D at some point, because there's no reason for you to fly up like that unless it's to come out of the screen. Now, Avatar, you are in the world, but nobody's doing that anymore, well, or since he did it, really.
Yeah, it's the same with the IMAX 3D. It's you always can tell because they come out months before the movie's released, well, such and such percentage of the movie was filmed in 3D or IMAX right. 3D, and you're like, well, that tells me you're just doing it for the gimmick, because you're not, if it's 25%, why do I care? Is that going to be worth a $15 ticket versus a $9 ticket?
Right. Yeah, I did that with one of the Transformers, and there were certain scenes that were gimmicky, absolutely, for sure. And there were certain scenes that every once in a while, I don't know, my brain goes, hey, let's check this out. And I'll lift up my glasses. And if you can tell, it's not shot in IMAX 3D. And we happen to have free IMAX 3D tickets for that movie. I wouldn't have paid for it. I like Transformers. I know I get grief for it. I like it, but I'm not going to pay for the IMAX 3D.
Nothing sells. I think we found a Transformer than when he says it in 3D.
But there's a scene. You could tell. I mean, I looked it up, and it's flat 2D. I'm like, well, that's disappointing. And, of course, there's scenes you know are 3D. But there's one scene that was perfect. It was an Avatar-like scene where they're getting ready to leave the planet, and the rocket ship is in the distance, and they're standing kind of midway between you, the camera focus, and the rocket. And you could really get the depth perception there. That was amazing. Optimus Prime swinging around on the little silver dragon thing was just gimmick as all get out. And why bother, right? Why bother shooting 10%, 15%, 20% of your movie in IMAX 3D, which is much pricier, if you're not really going to do it well? And I don't know, maybe Avatar didn't make enough money for other movie houses to jump on and go, oh, let's do it 100% in IMAX 3D, and you just get the experience. And Klotz, I think that's what you're talking about with VR. If we can really perfect VR, wouldn't that be the best way to watch movies?
I don't, yes and
maybe
no. Well, the problem is, you know, there's a lot of people who just can't handle 3D video, whether it be VR.
Sure, there's some movie motion sickness stuff, right?
Right. As a matter of fact, one of my good friends and a listener of the show, he runs a game design program at a local university, and they've gotten basically every VR product available so far. They've gotten one in so that they can, you know, use it and test with it and all that kind of stuff. And a number of them, I know of at least one of them that makes them a bit sick. You know what I mean? And this is somebody who plays video games, you know, on, you know, this is somebody who's firmly entrenched in the realm of video games and high quality video and all that stuff. And he still gets a little bit sick from one of them. But he just got the PlayStation VR this week, and he said that it was really crisp and, you know, nice. Clean, and that it didn't make him sick at all. And I think that's like, that's the thing, is we're getting very close. Like every iteration that comes out, we're getting a little bit closer to making it really good, but there's still some folks who are just not going to be able to do it. So you basically have a crowd of people who will never be able to, you know, use that kind of entertainment because it just doesn't work for them. And you have a crowd of people who get sick. Sometimes I'm probably one of those. And then you get some people who are like, yeah, I mean, throw however, you know, whatever kind of 3D you want at me, and I never have a problem at all. That's going to be always be one of the hurdles that we face with this kind of technology, is that people are inherently quite different, you know? And so, I don't think that the whole end – it's like the whole 3D thing. If anything is shown, ticket sales have shown, you can't just put all your eggs in the basket of 3D, because 3D bombs sometimes. There's a number of movies that have tried to make 3D one of their main, you know, elements, and it hasn't really done that well, you know, particularly like some of the more obscure stuff. So I don't think you can put all your eggs in that basket. I think, like you said, when you look at something like Avatar, where it's like, all right, we're doing this. Like, this whole movie is constructed around this technology. We're doing everything we possibly can to make it as immersive an experience as possible. And it's part of the experience. That is when it's going to be its strongest.
Yeah. Yeah.
All
right. Well, we've been talking a lot of good stuff. We got some more stuff to go, but I am going to take a break here. And then, you know, we gotta keep the roof on and the lights over our house and those kind of things. You know how we twist those things up. So check out our ads if you don't mind. Just 30 seconds of ads, man. And we'll be right back. We've got some Thor news, and then we might discuss some stuff we love that's going on right now. So stay with us. And we're back. I know, I just entertained myself. That's the whole point of this show, man. You guys are just here for the ride. So I brought this up because I know there's some, I don't know, I wouldn't say controversy about Thor, but when people start talking about their passion of the MCU, right, and the history of the MCU, Thor easily, the first two movies, although I thoroughly enjoyed both of them, I thought the second one wasn't quite as good. The first one was a little slow, but I just enjoyed different flavors of the comic book movies. So I enjoy them all is what I'm saying. But I could say Thor tends to – would you guys agree that Thor tends to fall towards the bottom of the MCU list as far as the best movies?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks for playing.
Chris didn't really chime in there. What do you think, Chris?
Come back to me. Let me formulate.
He's going to Google it real quick and watch it on like 10x speed just to see. All right. So, but Thor Ragnarok, of course, is coming out. And I'm a little torn on this one, to be honest with you. I liked the concept. I love that it's going to be, I use this term very loosely because I don't think it's going to be this, but a buddy cop film with Hulk and Thor doing their thing. I remember when the animation came out a number of years ago, Hulk versus, right? Mm-hmm. Is Hulk versus Wolverine, then Hulk versus Thor.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great stories, great animation. I really enjoyed it. So I very much like the interaction between Thor and Hulk. I've seen one or two screenshots, which I try to avoid the set leaks and those stills, but I can see the armor and I'm like, oh, we're going to do World War Thor, World War Hulk. Sorry. Thank you, Chris. Kind of. I'm like, well, that's my favorite Hulk storyline, so I hope they treat it well. But here's what's going on. Marvel hired, I'm saying this wrong, I'm sure, Taika Waititi?
You're on your own on that one.
Okay.
I believe it's Taika Waititi.
All right. See, class, this is why we keep you around. And he directed these two films I haven't heard of, What We Do in the Shadows and then Hunt for the Wilder People. Mm-hmm. But he's going to be the director is the director of Thor Ragnarok. And he said, I made an effort to ignore the fact that there are other Thor films in response to a comment about how Thor tends to look kind of bland and boring next to Loki, who's so charismatic and smart. Waititi said that was a major concern during shooting, and Thor is awesome now. But here are some points. This is from a Reddit AMA. But before I read these points, I don't know if we'll get back to these points. It's fine if we don't. What do you guys think about, is that the best way for a new director to handle a film, is just to kind of pretend the other two didn't happen? Or do you prefer continuity? Well, continuity being a loose term here, do you prefer homage?
Okay, so very famously, we just had the new Star Trek movie come out, Star Trek Beyond, where Justin Lin did that exact thing. He tried to ignore the second movie, right?
Is that what he did?
He very famously said that in interviews. He said, I'm going to pretend that the second film didn't happen. The reason being that there's a lot of objection to the way they handled the Khan storyline in the second movie, and that the Star Trek fan base, it's very split on that movie. He thought it was much safer to kind of dodge that and do his own thing. And we got a great film out of it. I mean, Beyond is a really fun film. It still might not be the kind of movie that like hardcore Trekkies wanted, but it's definitely, you know, a really solid film and a lot of fun. So now this director, I actually this is really funny. On Saturday, I happened to watch What We Do in the Shadows. A friend of mine showed it to me.
Okay.
And What We Do in the Shadows is it's a movie about four vampires who live together in Wellington, New Zealand, because the director is from New Zealand. He's a Kiwi. And it's got Jermaine from Flight of the Conchords.
Okay. Jermaine Clement?
Yeah, Jermaine Clement. And it's hilarious. It's really funny. It's kind of stupid. You know what I mean? Like it's the idea is that it's got these four vampires that emigrated to New Zealand for various reasons. They live together in a flat and a house. And it just kind of tells their story. It's a mockumentary style thing. He plays one of the characters in it. The director does.
Oh, interesting.
One of the four vampires. And it's really funny and quirky, and it plays off a lot of the tropes and stuff. And it's great. You know, it's got great comedic timing, and that's the whole thing. But it's a lot of understated comedy and stuff like that, and I really enjoyed it. And then I got home that night and saw the Ask Me Anything, and he was killing it, man. Like, the Ask Me Anything on Reddit, he was in there. He was just answering questions. Like, people asked him about the other two ones, and he was like, let's just pretend they don't exist kind of thing. Like, he was quoted as, you know what I mean? They actually asked him if he had seen them, and I think he implied that he had not. which is really funny.
But that would fit. That would fit.
Yeah.
With what he's talking about, ignoring that they didn't happen. He probably didn't want them to even subtly influence what he was doing.
Right. So what I think what we'll see happen here is he's going to take his talent, you know, at making unique cinema and turn it on Thor, and probably use some of the techniques that they've used, like some of the maybe more low-key comedy, like a little bit understated. Because, you know, comedy can be done in a number of different ways. You know, it can be do your obvious, very obvious setup punchline type thing. Or it can just be kind of like you slip those funny moments in, you know what I mean? Like other mockumentary style stuff like The Office. Like some of that stuff is set up, you know, punchline, all that kind of stuff. But some of it is just the passing comments that characters have. And that's some of my favorite comedy. Mm-hmm. I think that's the kind of thing that Thor and Hulk really lend themselves to, yes, as they've been presented so far in the Avengers films and all the side films, is that, you know, because Thor is the eternal straight man. You know, I mean, he's almost like Drax in the way that he doesn't always get, you know, what you're saying. He doesn't get it when you're joking with him per se sometimes.
Right.
I think we're going to see a bit of that. And, you know, Mark Ruffalo as Banner slash Hulk is going to have a lot of opportunity to play with that. So I'm really excited to see what happens. The guy's talented, though. So I'll say that I have a very firm belief that this can have some real potential. I was really blown away by that, the film of his that I saw. And I was really excited to see that he's the guy on Ragnarok. So I wouldn't be too concerned about his, like, the fact that a lot of people don't know who he is, but also by the fact that he's trying to ignore the other two movies, because that's probably for the best.
And I would, in the other direction a little bit, not worry so much about his direct influence on the movie and how it'll impact the canon of what we've seen so far, because you still have the Kevin Feige quotient out there, and you still have the overall view of the direction of these movies in this universe. So he'll get to play within certain parameters. So we won't have a night and day difference, I don't think, that between the first two movies.
Yeah, I'm sure there has to be some kind of continuity.
Exactly. So we'll get Thor with a twist, and I'm completely okay with that.
I like it. So here are some of the points that he's making about it. Expect an 80s retro vibe to the movie. I'm not sure what that means. And a, quote, crazy and very different tone.
Maybe it's a mall scene that'll actually make it into the movie.
You know, when you say the 80s retro vibe, I wonder if they're talking like they're going to try to hit the sword and sorcery films of the 80s note. You know, like the old Conan movies and stuff like that, where it's, because that's, you know, Thor has the potential for that to just be like the, here's the great hero going on the adventure type movie. And those were a lot of fun.
They
aren't masterpieces, but they're tremendously fun. You know,
I might argue that most geeks of any decent age, especially if they had exposure of geek parents, know who Red Sonja is. They've seen the movie. They've seen the Conan with Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, I might say that they were definitely cheesy, of course, in nature, but they have their masterpiece place in the geek culture, in my opinion, without a doubt.
So if James Earl Jones appears in a mass of furs, blame clocks.
That'd be something else, man.
That would be awesome.
That kind of would be, honestly. When you started talking about that before you got to the Conan part, I thought, what about the, what's the name of the movie? Johnny Five?
Short Circuit?
Short Circuit, yes. I was thinking about that. I love those things. You know, those were some of the best movies in the 80s to me. Although I would not go Revenge of the Nerds on this one. Thor and Glass. Well, okay, I was about to mock Thor and Glasses, but we saw that in Ghostbusters.
I was going to say Hulk could be Ogre. I mean,
Booger.
Nerds! Yes.
So, okay. So another point, he says he has zero interest in the Marvel DC rivalry. If people stop going to see superhero movies and both sides suffer. I don't know. Who's Tessa Thompson? Do you guys know?
Couldn't tell you.
I don't know. I guess that's an actress. She has a decent sized role. His favorite MCU movie is Guardians of the Galaxy. And he wanted to bring in John C. Reilly's character, but there's no real way to pull it off.
Yeah. See, that's no surprise to me based on having seen this film. Yeah, and the way he played, like, because that was the other benefit is I got to see him play a role, you know, a role in that film. And so you got to see him delivering his style of comedy, both from in front of and behind the camera. So, yeah, absolutely. Guardians of the Galaxy is totally up, you know, up his alley. So I would expect it's going to be something like that, where Guardians of the Galaxy is such a departure from the rest of the tone of the films, you know what I mean? It's got the comedy elements that are kind of run throughout, but it's just like kind of a completely different thing. It's its own thing, and you know, for sure. So I think we'll see something along those lines where he's really going to separate Thor here, and I think that's going to be fantastic.
I agree. I think it's going to make for a fun film.
I love his attitude towards the Marvel DC rivalry, because he's absolutely right.
Yeah.
You know, without devolving into the political situation that our country faces today, I don't want to see the kind of attitudes that are present in the political sphere in comic books. Like, people have got to stop drawing these battle lines and being like, you're one or the other. You know, Chris sits on this show and he's a big DC fan, but we have a tremendous focus on Marvel properties just because they have such a higher volume of content that's coming out, and so it comes across our table a lot more, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And he doesn't sit here and just bash everything that's Marvel, because he's a Marvel fan too. It's okay to be a fan of both, even if you didn't like BVS, Chris.
I was gonna say just not the movies, but and Tessa Thompson is the female lead from Creed.
I still haven't seen Creed. I love her. Really, really.
What is
about
wrong
it.
With you? Go see that movie tonight.
Chris, I haven't seen it either.
Oh my God, you both need to see it. It's so very good.
Should we go watch? Are you saying we should watch it with arms wide open?
Yes, with arms wide open.
Because that's how I'd watch it.
I know. It is so easily on par with the original Rocky. It's ridiculous how good that the sixth movie in a franchise can bring every bit of the feeling of the first movie back.
I love that. I will have to watch. I want to watch anyway, but that gets me.
Some would argue Force Awakens completely recreates the vibe and feeling of A New Hope.
But it didn't do it as well.
I'm just taking shots out there against the people who there's a lot of hate out there for Force Awakens that I think is kind of baseless.
Yeah, that was good.
I think it's too amped. I don't know that it's baseless.
Yeah. So in a stunning new shocking twist of turns here, you guys are a little young for this. I'm not sure where you fall, but in the early days of computers, like 1996, early days of computers, there was one man who ruled the gaming community as a character, one male character who ruled them all. Can you name that person?
Duke Nukem?
Yes, it is Duke Nukem. 3D 20th Anniversary World Tour is out now on your Xbox One, your PlayStations, your all kind of different digital download services. Frag likes it like it's 1996. This time with even more asses to kick. Join the world's greatest action hero in Duke Nukem 3D 20th Anniversary World Tour as he saves Earth once again. I threw in a little lift. Mike Tyson kicked in. Kicking alien... kicking alien ass and saving babes across the globe along the way. Blast your way through hordes of ugly aliens and four classic Duke Nukem 3D episodes, plus an additional all-new fifth episode from the game's original episode designers with new music and Duke talk from the original voice of Duke Nukem. I gotta tell you, man, the 16-year-old in me just is doing backflips, and I am going to... I don't know, man. It's $20, which isn't bad at all. This is on the Xbox One, which is what I would get it on. It's $20. I don't know if I can drop $20 on this, but I got to tell you, when I played this game back in the mid-90s, the first time I was exploring an area and I walk into a bathroom and I see a mirror and he comments on how he looks and you can actually use the toilet in the game, which has 0 point to it, but it's hilarious. You can throw dollars at strippers. I'm just saying, it broke a lot of ground. Not necessarily good ground, but it broke a lot of ground. It was so much fun to play in the 90s. What's your guys' memories?
I'm still a little salty on Duke Nukem Forever, so I don't know that I'm going to buy
the fact that they never made it.
Well, no, they did, and after years and years of waiting, it was
no. Yeah. I stand by the fact that they never made it. No, I absolutely get what you're saying on that. What about you, Klaus? Did you have any experience with this?
Yeah, I played the original back in the day. And then I own Duke Nukem Forever, though I played it for about a half an hour, and then I was like, all right, I'm done with this. It was a little nostalgia bomb for a couple minutes, but it didn't last. Yeah, I mean, that's cool. I'm glad you're excited.
But it made such a huge impact on me. Because when I was a preacher's kid, right, I was sheltered. I was new. The whole world of home computers was new then. Gaming was brand new. And, yeah, I mean, the rude comments he was making were not in any other games. The rude graphics. I mean, there's partial nudity. There's all kind of stupid stuff that has no point in a game, in any decent game at all, in this thing. But it did. It brought me... just hours and hours and hours of joy to the end where you're on a football field blowing up this massive alien and you end up kicking his decapitated head through a field goal.
I think what for me, Duke Nukem doesn't hold up. Like I would probably love not. To have held up. Cause Ash holds up watching Ash versus the Army of Darkness or the Evil Dead.
Yeah.
It holds up. In the video game realm, we've seen such evolution with those raunchy sort of characters. I mean, we start with Leisure Suit Larry, we go to Duke Nukem, and for me, that type of comedy or that type of character, you can't beat Conker anymore. Conker's the king.
I never really played it.
Paul, what say you? No love for the Bad Fur Day? Ah, kids.
Can't say that I cared.
Go back to your rocket hearths and your soccer leagues.
Well, speaking of which, shall we start talking about what we're reading, playing, watching?
Do it quick. We got to go. Yep.
Speaking of Rocket League, Rocket League's Halloween stuff is out right now. So if you're a Rocket League player, go play some games, get some of the exclusive Halloween stuff. Overwatch has an incredible special game mode for Halloween right now as well. So go check that out. And they have a ton of skins in their new crates for the Halloween season. I am watching Westworld, which is crazy good. Michael Crichton did a movie back in 1973, and the show is a continuation of that story. What's really great about it is it references the original, kind of like what you were talking about with Jurassic Park there, McFall, is that this is literally set like 30 years in the future of that world. So they reference an event that happened in the past. We don't have enough time for me to really get into what's amazing about Westworld, but check it out. It's great sci-fi. It's a little different than what you're used to nowadays because its pacing is kind of laborious. You know what I mean? But it's got exciting moments so far. Loving Designated Survivor, which is a political drama with Kiefer Sutherland as a cabinet member that becomes president all of a sudden after a devastating attack on the Capitol. That one's got some really interesting, West Wing type vibes, but it's not quite as Sorkin-y, if you know what I mean.
I liked it the first time when it's called Battlestar Galactica.
that plot line might have been plucked from Battlestar, but Battlestar is obviously had a wider, more complex story. But Kiefer Sutherland is killing it, though, man. Like you can try to joke about Designated Survivor, but it is really good if you're in a political drama. And then, of course, the exciting Walking Dead returns very soon this Sunday. So there was there was a 2-hour rehash special, and then there was a Talking Dead special that was really cool too. And the cast, the thing they kept talking about with the season 7 premiere is that you're going to be devastated. Like everybody's like, you think you know what you're getting ready for to find out, you know, who got to feel the brunt of Lucille, but like you have no idea what's coming. And you think that that's the thing you're really worried about, but they're like, it's just going to keep hitting you in the gut throughout the whole episode. So by the end of the season premiere, you're going to feel like an empty shell is the
extended premiere episode. And then I just read that the second episode is going to be an extended episode as well. So
Sweetheart,
I'm watching as much as I can that's out right now. We all know the comic properties that are back. I do want to pay a little extra attention to Supergirl. A little bit of spoiler alerts. The show's good. But I will go into a little bit more detail on Superman being kind of a dick in the first episode, first appearance. They go straight to the space plane rescue to bring them both in. That's fine. Supergirl is at the front of the plane trying to slow it down before it hits the Earth, and she's having a little trouble. Superman flies up. Hey, cuz, how's it going? She's like, hey, this looks like a job for both of us. Thinking the dude's going to lend a hand, right? So the engine in the back is on fire. Superman being the... Do you think he flies up and uses his super breath perpendicular to the flight path to put the fire out? Or do you think he gets directly behind the plane, shoots a super breath, adding more momentum to the plane that she is trying to slow down? I'm like, what are you doing, guy? Come on. Give your cousin a hand. Anyway, sorry. But this week, the other thing, yes, Walking Dead premieres this Sunday, but you'll want to binge this Friday because Black Mirror comes back on Netflix.
Oh, that's right.
So it's going to be a busy weekend, boys. Right. Busy weekend.
I'm glad I finished off Luke Cage. Holy crap, we got a lot of stuff to watch.
And then every day that goes by is just another day I get closer to Twin Peaks premiering on Showtime in 2017. So.
Are they redoing that one?
They're not redoing. It's re-showing a continuation. No, it's going to be a continuation. It's most of the same.
Apparently,
characters.
I need to go watch that because somebody talked about how sci-fi and Mulder actually shows up there first before the X-Files and this and that and the other. And I was like, all right. And I get maybe 30 minutes into the first episode. I'm like, this is boring as crap.
It's tough, man. It's not. Yeah. It's not easily accessed. Like it is a truly slow.
But does it get better as it goes on?
Everybody I know that was a fan of Twin Peaks that watched all of it said it's one of the most amazing things they've ever seen, and that you can't contemplate some of the twists and turns, and nobody, like a lot of them will argue that nobody's replicated that kind of television since.
I mean, it's a Lynchian thing is the deal. So if Lynch isn't your cup of tea, you're going to have a hard time sitting through it. But the thing that really drew me was the character work in that thing. Is that, yeah, the twists and turns are good. The story's good. It's the characters that just that keep me coming back. It's this menagerie of oddities in this town.
Fair enough. Well, I'm excited that season 12 of Supernatural has kicked off, and I'm a huge fanboy of that show. It's one of the only show literally that I am just fan about. You know, I don't try to convert anybody. I don't talk to anybody about it. But if I find out you watch it, we will talk for a while on it. My wife and I love it. I've watched every episode of every season, and I think I've rewatched up through season 10 again. Now, here's the interesting thing. I tried to find a podcast, right, just to enjoy. Surely somebody's talking about this show. Turns out the only podcasts out there are hosted by girls, and they're just like talking about how cute the guys are, and it makes me wonder what I'm really watching and what kind of community I'm a part of. But I like the lore. I like the supernatural aspect of it.
You didn't pick up on the fact that a big part of the supernatural fandom is about the eye candy.
It's settle down, Gilmore Girls, before you start throwing stones at McFall.
What are you talking about?
I just mean there's an intersection of the two audiences that maybe.
Anyway.
Whoa. Somebody just drew a line in the sand here. You don't get to call me Gilmore Girls because I've seen a couple episodes of a television program.
Please, you didn't shed tears when Rory went off to college. Please, tell me.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, you are a liar.
I didn't know that she went off to college. I honestly didn't. That's the thing. I've seen a bit of it. I've seen some of the character work on it, but I wasn't like glued to the TV every week to watch the new episode.
Well, my wife was, and I loved her, so I watched every episode.
Right. I was just going to say, you both have wives at home. Like, I know y'all have seen some stuff that you don't want to talk about, okay? I know y'all have seen way more of some shows than you want to admit. All right? Yeah. So let's not start throwing stones around here. Everybody's taking a TV bullet for a loved one before, okay?
Gilmore Girls was good. Melissa McCarthy was excellent. The actress who plays Lorelai was excellent. The guy who plays Luke was excellent. All the main characters were really, really good actors.
Apparently he's kind of a dick. Yeah. Like both.
It kind of seems like it.
Yeah. Like he was real tough to work with, I guess.
Anyway, I got to get out of here. So excited Supernatural's back. Of course, I'm watching all the comic book properties and I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I am excited that Black Mirror, although I really hate that you and Wisdom got me into watching Black Mirror because it's so dark.
Oh yeah,
so dark.
It makes you question everything about your life sometimes.
Yeah. What I'm playing is I am an Australian now, and I have the DC Comics Legends game.
Oh, good day.
Thank you. it's fun, and it'll be interesting when they finally get it ready to launch worldwide to see what they do with it. It's got a lot of hints of Marvel Avengers Alliance. If you ever played that. The number two, the one that was on the mobile device, there's some videos I've made out there that are decent, but it's definitely beta. It's definitely, I'm in a grind at this point, but I'm still finding it fun. Plants vs. Zombies 2, actually, I fired that back up recently, and that hits all the high notes for me. I love tower defense type games, and that one is one of the best ones, in my opinion, out there. If you like a tower defense kind of scenario, Plants vs. Zombies 2 is really good. And Ibbit, damn you, Ibbit. You got me into this Marvel Tsum Tsum game, right? It was this little Disney stackable figures based on Marvel characters, and it's a Connect 3 or more type of game. And I'm playing the full, I've got my wife playing it. We'll battle each other now and do that kind of thing. Nobody I know was playing this game. Ibbit quit playing this game. He like got me into it and then quit playing it, but it's a great game. I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. It's kind of like Puzzle Quest, where a little different flavor, right? It's more like Candy Crush in the sense of everything's moving and falling type deal. I don't know. It's got different tones than Puzzle Quest. It's got me going in. It's a much simpler version, and it's a lot of fun. And each game takes a minute. So I know when I look, it's like, hey, I got 3 minutes to kill, whatever, I'm waiting on something. I know I can play a game in a minute and be done, and then we put it back away. It's a lot of fun. Honestly, you should check it out, and we'll do that. All right. We are done. This is Breaking the Panel. I'm Charles. That's Paul. That's Chris. We're having a lot of fun. We hope you like what we're doing here with a little bit of change up with the format, with the discussions of the headlines, and more of a free-flowing thing that we have going on. Please get over on the Facebook page, facebook.com/breakingthepanel. That is where we're putting out headlines. That is where we're having the discussions with you, the audience. If you want to give your input on this stuff, do that there. Hit us up on Breaking the Panel on Facebook. One of us is on there every single day. You know, I might not get there every day, but I see that Chris gets there on the days that I'm not. I know Klotz is on it. We're always there doing something, one of us is. So be there, post with us, comment, share. We really could use your help and love you a long time. And if you'd like to get your email on the show, much like Frank and a bunch of others did last week, that is btp@giantsizeteamup.com. B as in breaking, T as in the, P as in panel, btp@giantsizeteamup.com. It's going to be it for this week. Tune in next week to hear me say, welcome, Matt Key. We're glad to have you on the show.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.